Welcome to Pathways to Success, a podcast produced by the Social Development Commission. It's conversation to influence Milwaukee County stakeholders and improve the quality of life for people experiencing poverty. Wherever you are, you can find a local community action agency. Gaining popularity in 1964, community action agencies have been a powerful tool in the war against poverty. Today, more than 50 years since its inception, community action agencies are still going strong. In fact, they've played a critical role during the pandemic. We'll talk about it this episode. After all, it's Community Action Month. If you are an activist, elected official, a funder, or consumer, you'll want to hear how your local community action agency can be a powerful ally that can expand your outreach in the community you serve. You're listening to SDC's Pathways to Success podcast. I'm your host, Kim Brooks. Welcome. Joining us today is George Hinton, Chief Executive Officer of the Social Development Commission, a CAP agency. Mr. Hinton is also chair of WISCAP, the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association, a network of Wisconsin's community action agencies. Welcome, Mr. Hinton. Let's jump right in.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for being with us. Let's start. What is a community action agency?
A community action agency is an organization that was first started during the presidency of President Johnson. He created community action agencies to address issues of poverty at the grassroots level in the various communities across the country. So in Wisconsin, we have 16 of them, one of them being the Social Development Commission, whose role is to provide services to help people while they're in poverty, to also address issues that might be keeping people in poverty, and also to coordinate with the community to make sure that we're making the best impact we can, and not only helping people who are in poverty, but help them get out. It's very specific to the community. So SDC may do it differently than, say, the one in Madison or the one in Green Bay, because they're going to be specific to the resources in that community, and then they're going to be trying to make sure that they're being a good partner in the community to make sure that we're doing or impacting the community the best we can collectively.
So they were very popular in the 60s during the initial fight or war on poverty. As we fast forward 50 plus years and look at the recovery with this pandemic, this ongoing pandemic, we know that Governor Evers turned to the state's community action agencies. Why do you think he did that, and how are they uniquely positioned for recovery during this pandemic?
Yeah, I like the fact that I think when we call it a war on poverty, it gives it a unique positioning. It means it doesn't go away just because you do a particular thing. This is a long-term problem. It's somewhat tied to our economy and how we position ourselves in the world in terms of doing business and also how we address wealth issues in our country. But one thing that's unique about CAP agencies, and one of the special things about CAP agencies, is we are all over the state and we have relationships all over the state. So some programs that came out as a response to the pandemic, such as rent assistance, was something that was better addressed through a statewide effort. And the CAP agencies were specifically unique, but also able to quickly turn the dime on programming and address those issues collectively across the state.
So rent assistance was something that CAP agencies around the state helped with.
Yes.
What about with the virus itself, the COVID-19?
Yeah, we're part of the network with the state, working with the state, with the federal government and local governments, agencies, as well as our community partners to try to not only give facts out about the virus, we're putting out information about the vaccine. We're trying to give people information so that they can make the best decisions for themselves and their family and their community. In addition, SDC is lending its locations in partnership with some of our healthcare partners to be able to put pop-up clinics so that people can come in their neighborhoods and get a vaccine. Just helping people take away some of the barriers that might be in place in terms of the locations, the timing, and a place that they can trust that they can come to get their vaccine and then not have to worry about transportation and those type of things. We're very busy people, regardless of your income level. And sometimes it's just hard to stop and do the things that you need to do to keep yourself healthy and keep your family healthy.
Right, right. Well, society has changed since CAP agencies were created. Poverty, has it changed?
Well, poverty hasn't changed. There's still this problem that we have in our country where we have a few people who are very wealthy and a lot of people who are very poor. That's been going on for quite a while. So it hasn't changed. I think one of those reasons are because we haven't really broke down some of the systemic issues that perpetuate poverty in our communities. So it's become more evident for everyone that we can't do transactional responses alone. We need to do transformative responses, things that actually address why poverty exists and why it can be generational. Issues like racism have to be put on the table, especially in certain communities where that seems to be a driving force for inequality. It's not the only one, but it's a significant one. In the rural areas, it may be something totally different. It could be issues around distance, transportation, population density. All those things impact the ability to have adequate resources in a geographic area.
When you talk about poverty at the root level, how do you best approach that and identify root causes? I think one of the things that people should know about CAP agencies in particular is the approach that it takes to assisting people in poverty. Can you kind of elaborate on that and how it's the person impacted by poverty or the person experiencing poverty that takes the lead? That's real important, not the other way around.
My background is in healthcare. So I learned a lot from being in that practice, in that business of delivering healthcare. And one of the things that I learned is the approach in healthcare is no two people are the same, and that you have to look at the holistic health of a person when you're dealing with whatever's going on with them, because you have to understand what that is and then make the appropriate interventions. It's the same thing with poverty. No two people's poverty is the same. And so you really have to look at a person, work with them so that you and they can understand what's going on, then put plans in place and resources in place that will transform what's going on in their lives of their family. I don't think we do that very well. I think we're learning how to do it better. I think we need to do it better as a community. But I also think we have to tear down some of the systemic issues that create poverty. You're not going to have a real good chance of getting out of poverty if our schools are not producing, even if you go through 12 years of grades, people able to compete in the marketplace, not in this country. So you need to make sure that there's a level playing field in our education process, for example. The other thing is you look at housing. We have a huge housing issue in Milwaukee. We are one of the lowest home ownership, especially for African Americans, in the country. And in addition to that, people in poverty are paying disproportionately higher percentages of their income on energy. Those things that they can least afford to not pay for, but eats up so much of their income that there are some statistics that show that some families are paying almost 50% on housing, rent, and energy. And then there's not a whole lot left when you talk about feeding, daycare, clothing, all those other things. They're just basic needs for families. So if you have a hard time meeting basic needs, the stress levels go up, you're dealing with mental health issues, maybe even increases in alcoholism and drug abuse. All those things are associated with struggles, long-term struggles that never seem to go away. So some of us need to back up, maybe take a look at poverty a lot differently than we do, because we blame people versus look at the system that create what we have today. Incarceration is a systemic problem. So just giving a person a job after they're incarcerated doesn't fix the problem. It actually tries to put a Band-Aid on a problem that needs to be fixed. Now, I'm not saying that people don't need help at that level. But if we as a society are ever going to change, then we have to transform what's causing people to go into prison. That's when you talk about root cause.
You are listening to SDC's Pathways to Success podcast. With that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hey, did you know that one out of four people in Milwaukee County are experiencing poverty? That means individuals and families are struggling to meet basic needs. That includes food. An And that's why the Social Development Commission has partnered with the Hunger Task Force to open a food pantry on Milwaukee County's northwest side, 9155 North 76th Street. That's near 76 and Brown Deer Road. More than a food pantry, SDC brings all of its services to the site to help Milwaukee County residents move beyond poverty. Tell someone and go to cr-sdc.org for more information. And we're back with George Hinton, the Chief Executive Officer of the Social Development Commission, which is a community action agency and Commission on Poverty, too. Thank you. I want to pick up our conversation. We were talking a little bit about better understanding the root causes of poverty. One of the things that I hear you frequently say is that poverty is so complex, and it helped to partner with a community action agency for that reason alone, because to just say I want to fight poverty or I want to impact employment or health disparities, it's not quite that simple. So talk a little bit about why you always say poverty is so complex.
You know, from what I could see, I've been working on the issue specifically around poverty for the last 8 years at SDC. I've learned a lot. I tell people all the time, I probably would have been a better executive in healthcare if I understood poverty better. I may have been able to explain to those individuals who make decisions how we need to approach things in a different way. So poverty is complex from the standpoint as, first of all, everybody's poverty is not the same. Secondly, there's a lot of different ways to get into poverty, and we don't respect that or understand that. We just see people as being in poverty. And we don't understand that a lot of times people are stuck in a system that perpetuates poverty. The culture and systems that they are in also creates that process and that problem. Even how we look to employ people in poverty can impact a person's ability to be successful at work.
What do you mean by that?
Because we throw jobs at people and just expect them to take it, rather than helping to find out exactly what they want to do first, and where does their natural tendency to want to be, which would help people first engage in a more personal way in their career. But also it gives a person the satisfaction of work. And then the other thing is we don't pay people enough money. The laws of supply and demand don't seem to work well in this country right now. Even in Milwaukee, we would have this holler for more labor, we refuse to increase wages. Now, I learned in economics school way back when that there's this pressure of the supply and demand that should dictate pricing and rates of pay. For whatever reason, we think that shouldn't work in this day. And I think that's exactly what we need to do. If you can't find anybody to work for you, maybe you're not paying enough. And guess what? You'll get more people to not only work for you, but maybe stay with you if the rate is enough to take care of their families and they can feel like they can actually live off of the rate of pay that they're getting.
And so if I'm a local community activist listening, could my organization partner with a local CAP agency to perhaps influence local officials, state legislators, employers? Because, for example, right now, there is a lot of discussion on increasing minimum wage.
And there's all these other counter discussions of why not. And I understand those, and those are somewhat legitimate, too. But yes, the first answer to your question is yes. If you're an activist and you care, please do, because we don't know everything. We're learning. We're a learning organization. We're starting to study deeper into some of these issues. We don't have it all right yet. But I think what I've learned and what we're telling everybody is learn it, understand it, and then deal with it. And at the same time, let's help as many people as we can. But we have to start dealing with some of these root cause issues that are causing this hyper poverty. Is it segregation? I know that we've been a segregated community for a long, long time. But we've also kind of commingled segregation with class. And how does the combination of classism and its effects on people and their ability to get resources, and then double down with racism, how's that affecting our ability to not actually put the resources in the right way to actually change the dynamics, change how it's going to play out long term? Those are the kinds of things, while we're activists, we have to start thinking a little deeper about what the problems are. while we're taking care of people and helping them to survive in the state that they are in today.
If you can, talk a little bit about the role that data plays with local CAP agencies, because, you know, how do you know where the need is? How do you know what is working or ineffective?
Well, for us, we're mandated, and which I think is a good idea, to actually do a community needs assessment every 3 years. And the way we do it is we do our own personal ask to our community, either through the research that we do or through just doing focus groups and asking people we serve, what do you need SDC to do? And what do you think are some of the issues, the major issues in our community? But we also have been taking other people's needs assessments, like in healthcare. We looked at some of the research done out of UWM, UW-Madison, on this issue of poverty. And we bring all that information together to see if there's any common threads that all of these research outcomes are saying, plus what is our community saying. And they tend to line up quite nicely. Like this last time, we found out that the issue was around housing. The issue was around appropriate healthcare. And wow, this is before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
The community was saying, we don't have adequate health care. And then we have a housing issue now, and as you can see, we're in eviction. We've got threats of eviction everywhere because of wealth instability, the lack of wealth in certain communities. So we take data to assess what we should do over the next couple of years. But it still doesn't take us away from starting to study why it is the way it is. So it's a combination of both and all.
And so if I am, for example, a politician, I can use your findings, your expertise, your observations.
You could use our observations, but I would also say there's a lot of data out there that really explains what's going on. What I think we don't have enough information on is why. We see a lot of outcome information, but we don't see root cause research. What caused this to happen? And so I'm calling for more transformative research versus the issues that we see today. We talk about the high levels of incarceration, but we never dig into why really dig into why and really be able to say, you know, we got some problems that started way before these people went to prison. And why aren't we fixing that? Because if you stop that pipeline, the other one will stop. The other one is in prison system is a good one because the way we've designed prisons in our state, it almost requires us to keep the prisons full, to keep an industry in place. And also we have certain communities whose economy is wrapped around those prisons. All those drivers has a way of working themselves out to create exactly what you designed. So we have to break down the designs that are impacting our communities negatively.
So poverty continues.
It continues and it will continue until we address it differently. And it's not just by throwing a lot of money at people and saying, okay, I'm going to help you get something to eat tomorrow. Because they're still going to be hungry the next day. Now, I'm not saying you stop that, but it's almost like when we talk about fixing our infrastructure. You fix the infrastructure, you stop having your cars damaged. If you just patch up the holes in the road, it's going to come back out next year.
Right.
So just fix the daggone road so it lasts for a while. Same thing with our systems. We got to rebuild our systems with the thought of how do we create positive outcomes for the entire community, regardless of who they are.
As one goes, we all go.
Hey, I don't know who told somebody if somebody's doing well. If one person's doing well, that means you have to do bad, because I don't think that's true.
Your personal story is inspiration within itself that shows that poverty does not have to be. Will you share a little bit about your story and explain some of the elements that helped you?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times we blame parents for the success of our children. And in my case, it wasn't the parents. And I think in many cases, it isn't. It was more the influence of the streets that caused me to go from being a kid that went to school every day to one that dropped out. Maybe I could have talked to somebody that could have helped me through that process. Maybe that would have helped. I don't know. I think those are the types of things we need to do more of, is talk to our young people, especially when they're in decision-making mode and don't quite know which way to go, right or left. They need people that they trust that they can talk to. I would say it's because I was raised by two women and there was very few men in our lives that might have been able to touch me in a different way. During that time, I've made a point to make sure that I'm doing that with my children, especially my boys, because that's important. And also what I found from my daughters is that that's important for them as well. So I dropped out of school and went into the Marine Corps, and that's not possible for young people today. It was possible for me, and that was because my mother wanted to save me. And so she signed me up to go into the Marine Corps, which was scary for her, I'm sure.
Sure.
And very impactful for me. Now, I'm a Marine. I talk about it with pride today, but I would tell you I couldn't stand it when I was in there because they was always telling me what to do, and I don't like people telling me what to do. But when I reflect back on all the things I've learned, I use it today. They taught me how to be very, very focused on my goals and not to give up on myself, not to give up on myself. And so for me, that has guided me to make decisions that I thought would always, in the long run, make me be a better person. And I had help along the way. And I look at that from two different ways. I had help along the way. People came and helped me because I saw something in me and then gave me an opportunity that they probably wouldn't have if they didn't take the time to see it. And I was able to prove that you didn't waste your efforts with helping me. I actually performed and did what I needed to do to make you feel like you did a good thing. That happened a couple times in my career. And so I went from being a dropout. I went to MATC to get my associate's degree. UWM, I got my finance degree. Mm-hmm. Then I went to UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham, and got my master's degree in healthcare. All of that with help and consultation from others and encouragement from others to keep on going and fight through your own insecurities. I fought through the insecurity of dropping out of school for years, thinking that I was never really ready to go because I didn't finish school. So you just have to take those opportunities and never give up on yourself. Never give up on yourself. And never let anything negative keep you from still going forward and trying again. And that's the one thing about the Marine Corps. You could fail, but you always had to get up and try it again. And so that kind of drove me through my career. But I would like to say this about that. Remember I told you a lot of people helped me?
Yeah.
When I reflect on it, that's not equality. I was a talented person. Sometimes I wonder, why couldn't I have been able to be successful without so much help? That means the system itself is not set up for just people who are talented, especially if you look like me, to be successful, as successful as you could be, without the helping hand of others. Now, there's nothing wrong with helping somebody, but what we see in our community is that's about the only way you're going to get something, is if somebody helps you. That's not the way it is for most communities. Your talent is respected, and you get things for your talent.
And so what would the role be for community action agencies in helping create an equitable playing field for people like the younger George Hinton?
Well, I think as a community action agency, we have to make sure that while we provide services and help people get jobs and help people get their GEDs and stuff like that, we also need to put the softer aspects of why that's important in play. We have to take time to talk to people, help them figure it out about, and help them find their own drivers of success. Not my drivers of success, but what are your drivers of success? And then use those as your engine to be successful. And we have to stop telling people what they need to do to be successful. I'm struck by the fact that we have so many artists that I don't see anymore. That's a career. And I'm not just talking about the rappers that get on TV. I'm talking about the plethora of jobs in arts.
Sure.
But I would say that about anything. We have to do a better job of opening up the possibilities of the different jobs so that people can have a dream about being something other than what we typically say when we're talking to people about jobs. In healthcare, the first thing people say is you need to be a CNA if you're looking for a job. Well, why can't you be a billing clerk, medical records tech? If you go to tech school, why don't you go become a radiology technologist?
And these jobs would typically pay more.
A lot
to
more.
To support families.
A lot more. Typically, they're high school diploma jobs or two-year college technical jobs. There are lots of jobs out there that we are not channeling people to look at and supporting them to take and get. That's part of the problem. Sometimes we're driven too much by the needs of the businesses versus the needs of the communities we serve.
And that's where your community action agencies, again, step in and help provide more of that balance.
Yes. And we the nice thing about community action agencies, just the way we're building, especially SDC as a community, as a commission, we're built to speak to power, and we don't do it enough. And even if we're wrong, we should still speak what we think and then be open to have our opinions change once different information comes into play. But right now, we're too quiet.
And is that true of all community action agencies? They have that power to speak to issues impacting the community.
They have an implied mission within that. The difference between all of my sister agencies, especially in the state, and SDC is we're commissioned to do that. We have a commission. We have an ordinance that says this is what we should do. We should be speaking to issues of root cause issues of poverty and working with our legislators and our business leaders and our community leaders around how to do this stuff differently. And I would be honest and say that we haven't done that very well, but we are working on it today. We're working on how do we get back to doing what we used to do when we was first created and be unafraid to work with our partners and address issues that our young people are throwing in our face every day right now about how it just doesn't seem quite right. Guess what? They're right. Something's not right, and we need to fix it as a community.
And so what does partnership look like when a funder, when a community organization, when individuals engage with community action agencies?
I like partnerships that have a two-way in and out. You know, you don't, as a partner, you're not dictating. You're really talking through. And I think we don't talk enough with our funders. I think it's better now, but we should talk a lot more. If we're going to put some money out there, let's really address not just a person's hungry. That's important, especially during the pandemic. We have food deserts all over the place. Those are important issues. But I'm sure the people who give them money to give to us is looking for long-term solutions to be worked on. And so we need to break away some of our funding that really dig into the long-term solutions of poverty while we're still dealing with some of these. Because then we're starting to reduce the outcomes at the end. And there's a balance. And we're taking and actually addressing the issues of poverty. Milwaukee's housing problem, for example, started during desegregation. And there was this huge white flight of the majority community who actually left Milwaukee because they didn't want their kids going to school with kids that they weren't used to having go to school with. That means Black kids going to school with white kids. So there was a lot of flight to the suburbs. And if they didn't leave to the suburbs, they moved their kids into private schools. And so the public schools was the haven place, the place where integration took place, but there was no real integration. Today, and because they did the flight away and into the suburbs, all these homes were empty that turned into rental properties, not home ownership properties, for the individuals who actually live there. So you fast forward now, what, 50 years?
Yeah.
We got homes that are decimated that have been used to just push out, make money for people and never invested in. And then people look at it and say, well, look what them people did to their neighborhood. No, it was the whole rental industry that destroyed the property. People don't destroy roofs, pipes, shingles. These are infrastructural issues that were caused by an economic system that went all out to just make money and never thought of just putting a process in place to get home ownership early on into those homes and then support those individuals that own those homes, take care of them, and give them the appropriate value for their investments.
And so the next step then for a community action agency to address something like that?
Something like that for me is we're working right now to work with different groups of people who are doing impact housing, where they're looking at whole neighborhoods and saying, can we change the whole dynamic of that neighborhood? How can we work with the people who live there, work with the property that's there, fix it up, tear it down, build new, whatever it is, and create a system of success in neighborhoods? What I used to love about Milwaukee when I was a kid, we were neighborhoods. We're not any longer. We're not. And back in those days, everybody knew each other because we was a neighborhood. Now people are so transient, they don't even get to know each other. Kids don't go to school in one place. They don't know each other. I'm not saying we're going to go back to that, but we got to be innovative to find out how to get something that has better outcomes than what we have today. And I think that's what community action agencies need to do more of, working with our partners in the community. Talk about real solutions to transform real problems, deeper problems than we're talking about today. We're starting that process. And it was started with some of the activities for my young folks around this issue of policing.
And to learn more about community action initiatives, what's the best way to get that information? You also have state and national conferences where people are able to engage around these issues, right?
Yeah, we just had a state conference for WISCAP, which is all the CAP agencies, organizations, the association organization, where we had a conference on poverty. We, SDC, has a conference on poverty, did before the pandemic. We're going to do one again in October this year. Still working out if it's going to be how we're going to do it because of the virus. and its presence in our community. But I would say, you know, contact SDC, look on our website first, and invite us to come and talk, challenge us to talk about what it is. We don't have all the answers. I'm just saying we're thinking about it differently. And and the call to action for me is that everybody should think about it differently. Think about why it's happening versus what's happened. Why is it happening? And we'll begin to understand, I think, that the reason why things are the way it is because something else is wrong. And we need to fix that.
We've been in conversation with George Hinton, Chief Executive Officer of the Social Development Commission, a CAP agency. Thank you so much, Mr. Hinton, for taking time to be with us today as we celebrate Community Action Month.
Well, I appreciate your opportunity for me to talk and give you my thoughts.
You've been listening to SDC's Pathways to Success podcast. I'm your host, Kim Brooks. We'll see you next month. Subscribe to the Pathways to Success podcast now and never miss an episode. And don't forget to leave a review. To learn more about what you've heard on the show today, visit our website at cr-sdc.org. That's cr-sdc.org.